are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. President Biden stops in California to get a firsthand look at the damage caused by weeks of pounding rainstorms. CBS's Donya Backus in Los Angeles.
First, he took an aerial tour.
It's not as obvious from the air just how much damage has been done. You don't feel it till you walk the streets or when you're able to walk.
Then spoke with business owners in the historic tourist town of Capitola, where high surf destroyed part of its pier and left the town flooded. He also toured a state park.
I've instructed my administration to bring every element of the federal government together with the help of immediate needs to long-term rebuilding to do both.
Donya Backus, CBS News, Los Angeles.
During a press conference in California, President Biden is asked about the documents marked classified and found at his Wilmington, Delaware home and a D.C. think tank. They're now the subject of a probe by special counsel.
We're fully cooperating, looking forward to getting this resolved quickly. I think you're going to find there's nothing there. I have no regrets. I'm following what the lawyers have told me they want me to do. It's exactly what we're doing. There's no there there.
Actor Alec Baldwin and a weapons specialist face involuntary manslaughter charges following the shooting death of cinematographer Helena Hutchins. It happened on the Rust movie set in New Mexico in 2021. CBS's Chris Van Cleve with a statement issued by the Hutchins family.
We thank the Santa Fe Sheriff and District Attorney for concluding their thorough investigation and determining that charges for involuntary manslaughter are warranted. Our independent investigation supports charges are warranted. It is a comfort to the family that in New Mexico, no one is above the law.
Our Steve Futterman has the latest on last week's meltdown that caused the FAA to stop departing flights nationwide for approximately 90 minutes.
The FAA now says last week's problem that disrupted more than 11,000 flights was the result of contract personnel unintentionally deleting files. The FAA says the deletion occurred when they were trying to synchronize primary and backup databases. Officials say there is no evidence at this point of a cyber attack or malicious intent.
Was mistaken.
Singer-songwriter David Crosby, whose voice was part of the music revolution in the 1960s and 70s, has died at the age of 81. Crosby was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame twice as a member of the Byrds in 1991 and Crosby, Stills, and Nash in 1997. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen kickstarts the Biden administration's visits to Africa with stops in Senegal, Zambia, and South Africa. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual.
The Shaw 101 FM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnier with your headlines. Don't expect the price of your morning omelet to come down anytime soon. Egg prices have gone through the roof, with historic highs of $8 to $9 a dozen for specialty eggs. Much of the reason the avian flu that decimated flocks across the country, especially in the Midwest, exposure to that avian flu resulted in the deaths of 3.3 million chickens in Wisconsin. One-tenth of the chicken population in the country has been destroyed in the past year. Egg producers are trying to repopulate their flocks, but say it will take time. The owners of Northwoods Timber must pay more than $1 million in back wages and civil penalties for lying to workers from Mexico and Central America about where they'd work and how much they'd get paid. The Madison U.S. Attorney's Office says Alfredo and Patricia Aguilar pleaded guilty to one count of fraud. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
We'll be right back.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous Ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. On an earlier edition, we talked to three women, med students, about whether they're going to stay in Wisconsin to practice medicine.
All this Roe v. Wade stuff, and now OBGYN's hands are so tied. I don't want to go through 12 years of training to have some person that didn't do training tell me how to do my job.
It is not a binary choice. You're for or against abortion. It is a healthcare decision. We all have those stories, and people want to hear them.
Don't miss the real stories here on Up North News.
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM. The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at WAUK.
And I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So my mind is still in this place on Social Security, because I think it's important to remember Social Security has been the best anti-poverty program we've ever put into place. By far. Took seniors who were living lives of being in destitute, living I go back to when I was a kid. My mother worked in a nursing home for the indigent. These were people who didn't, Social Security, they got pennies out of. And their lives were horrible. They were warehoused in horrible places. And the stories that they told, and look, I was fortunate enough to have to be in that place. And I got to listen to these people's life stories. They got, you know, how horrible things used to be. And you think where we are, and there's this idea, and I've had people tell me, no, the Republicans, they just use this, this Social Security, it's just a political ploy. They're not really going to destroy it. They're not really going to take Social Security away from Granny. They're not really going to take Medicare away from Granny. They're not really going to, you know, end Roe versus Wade. Oh, wait a minute, they did. I go back to that when someone, you know, the Maya Angelou quote, when someone shows you who they are, believe them. Believe them when they say they want to destroy Social Security and Medicare. Believe them. Now, what's interesting to me is they all pitch this, well, we want less spending. You know, one of the conservative minds, we need to spend less. But yet when I ask conservatives, what do you want to spend less on? You know, what spending do we cut? Can't touch the military budget. Can't do that. That's off the table completely. Can't touch, you know, the tax code. That we give, you know, trillions of dollars to the very wealthy and corporations. Can't touch that. So what do? Well, we kick the poor. We kick people who, again, you know, as we pointed out earlier, those who are viewed as less deserving. But when it comes down to actual cuts, the average Republican voter, and this is where the difference between the policymakers and the people are. You know, I've been taking a lot of guff here the last couple of days because I've said, look, you know, these failed states in the South that don't help their citizens, don't protect their citizens, don't lead to, look, places like Arkansas, like Georgia, like Alabama, like Mississippi, lower life expectancy rates, higher infant mortality rates, higher poverty rates. All of the negatives are higher. All of the positives are lower. Does it mean that I have a problem with the people of Alabama or Arkansas? No, I've met them. They're beautiful people. I want the best for them. It's their policymakers. It's the ideology that's being rammed down people's throats. That's what I have a problem with. Practice your religion. Do your thing. But don't push it on other people. Yeah, I go back to that. I was thinking about an acquaintance I had years ago. And I can remember it like it was yesterday, because it was such a foreign idea that I was just like, wow, so you literally reach into a box of snakes. As part of their religion, they would reach into a box of snakes and pick up and handle the snakes. Because in the Bible, it says something about handling snakes. And I said, well, what happens if you get bitten? You know, oh, well, we've got the anti-venom in the back. And this comes back to that mental gymnastics that a lot of my Republican friends have. I said, well, hold on. If the test is you reach into the box and it's God's will that the snake bites you and you die, aren't you usurping God's will? No. The mental gymnastics come. You know, if God didn't want us to have the anti-venom, he wouldn't have allowed us to create it. And I'm going, okay, well, what's the point then? If you're supposed to, you know, reach into the box, God's will is you get bitten and you die, but you have the ability to not die, what's the exercise for? He said, it's to make us lead better lives. And I'm going, at a certain level, okay. How many times have you been bitten? Like 7 or 8. Really? And the more I learned about this guy, the more he would do just the most outrageous, you know, unethical, unfaithful kind of things. I'm not going to go into it because he's probably listening. But the justification was there. And they've used this kind of stuff to justify just about anything. And taking food out of the mouths of children and granny, that doesn't faze them. On the aggregate, I mean, when you talk to individual people, I love individuals, groups not so much. And I think this is what's going on with the Republican Party, that once you say, hey, there's something wrong with your party platform, there's something wrong with the direction your party's taking this country, it's an attack on the individual. I'm not attacking the individual. You know, when someone says the Democrats are screwed up and they do something stupid, I look at it and go, yeah, they are. Policy-wise, they may not agree with it. But we're in a weird place in this country right now. Well, we can't have those discussions. The stove thing to me is amazing. Because I do have that vision in my head of someone like Matt Gaetz wearing an asbestos coat going, you're not going to take my asbestos coat. I want to hear your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. Are you concerned that Social Security is on the cutting block? Or is this just another one of those things you go, look, it's performative. You know, will Biden actually sign a bill if it ever gets through the Senate? And it won't. And then why? Why the performative stuff? Like the tax thing. We all know that tax scheme that they came out with on Wednesday, never going to pass. Never going to become law. It's their wet dream list. It's what they tell us they want. It's performative for their donor class. Because what that tax bill would do is it would cause mass inflation, massive inflation. And possibly the de-inflation, we would see consumerism, you know, drop. We could have an argument. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I don't know. But the policies that they are pushing are horribly destructive for working people. And this is the distinction. The distinction is the policies that they push work perfectly for the folks that they're supposed to work for. These tax schemes are supposed to work for the wealthy. These tax schemes are supposed to enrich corporate America. They're not supposed to help you and me. For me, it's that simple. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on line one. Alice, how are we doing today?
We're doing okay. I'm reporting in because I spoke to my local Trump supporter today.
All right, let's hear it.
They brought up the gas stoves and we're having a fit. And I was like, you don't even have a gas stove. You have an electric stove. But I like gas compared to electric. I said, okay. And I said, well, you know, they're not coming for the gas stoves. Oh, yes, they are. I said, they're not. I have a gas stove. So I looked it up. The only thing they were saying, they were recommending that some revisions be made to the way things are on the stove and suggesting that perhaps we should start using electric stoves more. We'll have to go look it up. And then, of course, they brought up that they are not getting rid of Social Security. That's just fake news.
It's fake news. Okay. No, look, you know, you got Joe Manchin in Switzerland, you know, saying, hey, this might be a bargaining chip. We can work on it. But, okay, it's fake news.
Yep. So I'm just reporting back, letting you know what's going on, because they are a big Fox News listener, and they just love the right-wing sites on Facebook. So that's what's going on.
Doing their research.
Oh, yeah. And let me throw this in there. You were talking about the snake handler group.
Yeah.
My husband's ex-wife's bunch were snake handlers. So I can assure you that they're all a little bit crazy.
And look, I'm okay with that. God bless you. If you want to do that, that is your right to do. I am never going to stop you from doing something that will only harm you and yourself. When you start harming others, now we got problems.
Right. Well, their thing was they didn't have the venom, but their minister milked the rattlesnakes and copperheads before they threw them out there for them to pass around.
Oh, okay. Well.
And they actually have, and I'm not lying to you, my stepson, unfortunately, was involved in this years ago. That crossed over in Morgantown, they have a snake hunting thing every year. The fire department does, and I'm not joking on this because my stepson kept trying to get me. I'm like, I'm not getting involved with this. Where then they would then sell the snakes to the local church.
Okay. Okay.
So have a good evening, Rick.
Wow. Okay. Well, you know, look, and again, this is the great thing about America. You can do that. And I'm not going to stop you. I have no problem with you going and hunting the snakes. The good thing is you're going to get them out, and maybe it's a positive. But again, it comes back down to something, you know, my grandfather always said, you know, don't worry about me, worry about yourself. You know, the whole Justice Hugo Black thing. You have the right to flail your fists around until they touch the tip of my nose. And this is where I keep coming back and siding with liberal democracy. You have the right to do that stuff. In conservative world, in the world that they want to create for us, this utopia that we hear from the right, you don't get to be whoever you are, whoever you want to be. You have to mold into what their narrow minds. And look, I don't agree with people. I would never pick up a snake. In fact, you know, my youngest daughter has one. I said, if I have to pick it up, he's going to meet the business end of a shovel. It's that simple. That's, you know, you have the right to do that. We need to get back to that. We need to get back to my philosophy of I don't care. I don't care what you do. I want you to be happy. Want to hear your thoughts? 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. Quick break. Right back. Fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Kurt sent me an email. And if you want to email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com is the email. He says, an interesting, not so fun fact. All of the Republicans who are serving on the House Homeland Security Committee either asked for a pardon for Trump for their involvement in the insurrection on January 6, 2001, or voted against certifying the electoral votes of the 2020 presidential election. Another interesting and not so fun fact is that Kevin McCarthy, our Speaker of the House, who is behind the vice president in the presidential line of succession, also voted against certifying the 2020 election. The American Republican Party's elected officials are exactly like the Saudi Taliban back in 2001 under Osama bin Laden. And the Republicans are much more dangerous because they are an enemy from within. It's interesting you bring up bin Laden. Someone asked me just today, did I know if bin Laden's cousin, because evidently the bin Laden family is huge, that one of his cousins is a conservative pundit here in this country. He's like, did you know that? I'm going, yeah, I understand. The bin Laden family's rich and powerful and in a lot of places, a lot of media spaces. And you may remember, you know, after the attacks on 9/11, the bin Laden family was able to get out of Dodge on private jets before they stopped all of the planes from leaving the country. So, yeah, I'm not surprised by that. And Kurt, you're not wrong. It is what it is. Also got an email that says the national debt incurred since 1789 when George Washington became president to the present, 1/4 of the 234 years of debt it was incurred between January 20th, 2017 and January 20th, 2021. Refresh my memory. Who was president in those 4 years? Yeah, it was the former guy. It was 45. And we know he spent a huge amount of money. And you know where a lot of it went? Most of it went to rich people because that was the plan. You look at that tax code. You look at that, the one legislative victory that they had, the one thing that they did follow through on, that tax scheme, it enriched the very wealthy. All of the benefits that came to working people like you and me, all of those are sunsetting. So any of those benefits are going to go away unless they're re-upped down the road. And remember, Rick Scott has his 11-point plan to sunset all federal programs every 5 years so that they have to be reauthorized. Again, another backdoor way of destroying Social Security and Medicare. Again, back to their wet dream list. Understand who these people are and what they want, what the future for this country in their mind is, and where they want to take us. This is the concern that I have. Again, we're so focused on what other people are doing in the confines of their four walls. The people who tell us they want small government. I actually don't know what that means. I want effective government. I don't care what size it is. I want it to work. Right now, we don't have effective government because it's being run by people who have told us they don't believe in it. This is the part that I'm struggling with. And what goes through a voter's mind that they go, no, I'm going to vote for the guy who's telling me they're going to destroy what's going on. Now, understand, and I get it. Those voters have been sold, you know, 40 years of Limbaugh and outrage radio. They've been outrage cable news. They've been sold this that the country's, you know, under attack and all these nefarious forces are around every corner. You know, the stove troopers are coming. You know. Much like MS-13. Remember them? You don't hear much about MS-13 anymore, do you? But every couple of months, there's a new boogeyman. There's somebody else to be afraid of. Which is why you gotta grab your gun. Because they're around every corner. Be afraid. And then lash out. And this works to whose advantage? The wealthy. Because when you talk to the average person, and I talk to Republican voters all the time, they want the same things I do. Individually, when you talk to them person to person, they want the same things that I do. We want health care. We want good jobs that pay wages that we can support our families on. We want some retirement security that when we get old, we're not going to be destitute. We want opportunities for our kids, education, job opportunities. You know, there's a place where everyone should come together on issues, trade. We should be agreeing on trade. We should make stuff and actually trade it instead of shipping jobs overseas and then just buying stuff from overseas that we used to make here and calling that trade. I've yet to find a Republican who says, no, we should do away with Social Security. But you ask them about socialism, they lose their, they blow a gasket without thinking that, you know, in the word Social Security is the word social. Never mind. Because they see it in action. You know, I've been called everything under the sun, and I get the email, so you don't have to. But there is a way forward that, that creates an environment for families to do better. And we're not getting that out of today's Republican Party. I wish we did. Look, I wish we were arguing about policy initiatives. I wish we were arguing about, you know, which way to get to the destination. When my wife and I jump in the car together, you know, we're gonna debate on how we get there. Fortunately, she's come accustomed to closing her eyes while I drive. But we're both going to the same place. The question is how to get there. We're not doing that anymore. You've got these characters who it's all about them. It's all about, and I love this, we're gonna tick off the libs. Little secret, you don't anger me. My resolve becomes stronger because we have to fight to defend what this country stands for and the direction we're going to take this country, which is a liberal democracy where people have opportunities and freedom to be who and whatever they are within the confines of their four walls and in the space between their ears. Yeah, I get this nonsense. Well, we got to do away with same-sex. I don't care about same-sex marriage. Two people want to get married, God bless them. Wish you the best. Just don't make me do it. But we've been sold this outrage that everything is dire. And there are some good things happening in this country. We're investing in the future for the first time in a long time. We've actually got policies that are moving us, I think, in a better direction to undo some of the bad policy of the supply side voodoo Reaganomics. The idea that we give rich people everything they want and maybe there'll be something left over for us. Let that sink in for a minute. That's what they sold us. They packaged it better because they're slick. They packaged it in hyper-individualism and then you're going to be rich, when the reality is inequality in this country is getting bigger and bigger to where we're back to the Gilded Age with wealth inequality. The difference is they keep us entertained with bread and circus, or as I used to say, American Idol and Cheetos. Question is, what are we going to do about it? This Social Security thing, is this finally the battleground that working people fight for? Or do we, again, acquiesce? When will we be like the French? He said we should be like the French. They're talking about raising the retirement age by 2 years from 62 to 64 in France. And they're marching in the streets. They're shutting things down. Direct action. That's what democracy looks like. That's what people power is. Will we do that on things that matter? No, but we'll send some crazy people to the Capitol to defecate on our floor and urinate on people's desks, all in the name of stopping the steal for a guy who clearly lost and truly, truly knew he lost. But was a poor sport. This is the sad reality of who we've become. Are you happy with who we've become? Are you happy with the poor sportsmanship? I hope not. Hope not. Lots to get to. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, China on front stage. As I've been saying, I think the Biden administration is doing a good job moving us in a direction to reshore manufacturing, invest here at home. There are some conversations coming up in China with here in the future. We've got some elected leaders and our Treasury Secretary, you know, trying to figure this stuff out. The hope? Reshore manufacturing, become the economic powerhouse we once were. I think we can do that. Love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. President Biden says after touring the storm damage in Northern California that there's a lot of work to do and federal help is available.
We'll see the full extent of the damage to the homes, the businesses, and the farms and ranches. And we now we know some of the destruction is going to take years to fully recover and rebuild.
Actor Alec Baldwin and a weapons specialist are facing involuntary manslaughter charges after the 2021 movie set shooting death of cinematographer Helena Hutchins. CBS News legal contributor Jessica Levinson.
What we do know, I think, is that the prosecutor did not find intent. And that's why you see these involuntary manslaughter charges, is that nobody thinks there was an intent to kill Hutchins.
After an 8-month investigation, the Supreme Court does not know who leaked its draft opinion overturning Roe v. Wade. CBS's Jan Crawford.
At this point, we're kind of back where we started, wondering who leaked this to Politico. And remember, I mean, this has never happened before.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. The embattled vice chair of the Wisconsin Elections Commission says he has no plans to step down. Bob Spindell tells Channel 27 in Madison there's nothing wrong with praising Republican efforts in Milwaukee, which led to a drop in turnout among Black and Hispanic voters. The commission oversees elections in Wisconsin. Spindell was also one of the fake Trump electors. Democratic state senators yesterday called for Spindell to resign or be removed from the commission. Changes are coming to Culver's. The Wisconsin-based burger chain is trading Pepsi for Coke. A Culver's spokesperson says it will take some time to make the switch. There are 800 Culver's in 26 states. Root beer and Dr. Pepper are staying put. In sports, Marquette beat Providence last night 83-75. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Catch Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow at its brand new time, 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays.
The city of Shanghai started administering an inhalable COVID-19 vaccine. I hear a lot of you saying the same thing I had in my head. I don't know about that.
As long as they are not just crop dusting everyone.
Crop dusting, that's exactly what I think people would be fearful of. I would not trust the Chinese government. I would trust people who really know about inhaling something and the good that it does you. Of course, I'm talking about Dom and Crute.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to the Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Only on WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, The Shaw.
Hey, son. How are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Attacks are silly because they are silly, and also because they're attacking the future. To work for yard sanity and choice, go to rewild.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Wednesday, you had Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen visiting with the Chinese vice premier over there in Davos there. And look, this is another one of those points of contact between the Biden administration and the Chinese going, hey, we're not going to undo all the stuff that everyone thought we were going to do and undo the tariffs and go back to business as usual. And thank goodness, it's about time we wake up. And I don't know how much of this is, you know, coming out of the pandemic, that we realize our supply chains are horribly broken and we're way too dependent on communist China. Or if it's just us going, hey, wait a second. We want the jobs back. We should have domestic production for domestic consumption. Heading in the right direction. At least I think so. And here to share some thoughts on, well, are we? And is the administration doing what we need to do? And are they doing it fast enough? That's why I've asked Emily De La Bruyere to come talk with us. She's the co-founder of Horizon Advisory. HorizonAdvisory.org is their website. They've also got a new piece out on Dell, bringing production back, and also asking the question, is that enough? Emily, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start with what's going on over there in Switzerland with Yellen and the vice premier there. Another point of contact, another moment for the Biden administration to stand up for American workers. Am I reading this right, or is there something else here?
I mean, obviously, I always have to see the glass half empty because that's why you have me on. There's a part of this that I actually find very frustrating because on the one hand, you know, yes, the Biden administration's rhetoric has correctly been one of competition with China, but much of the reason, or at least how they're framing their recent interactions with the Chinese government, including Yellen's visit with Liu He, much of that they've said is like, around making sure that competition stays below a simmer, managing the competition to make sure it doesn't turn into conflict. And I mean, that's a frustrating thing, at least for me to see, because this is a conflict. China sees it as a conflict. And saying that the US is trying to manage it to keep competition limited to certain domains or below a certain threshold means that China doesn't take us seriously. Because they know that we're constantly going to try to find a compromise and that we're going to try to de-escalate the second anything gets too extreme. And that gives them something to play with.
But could you look at this and go, look, we're losing. You know, we've lost this battle already. We've given away our manufacturing base. Coming out of the pandemic, I think most of us realized our supply chains are way too broken and we're way too dependent. Maybe I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt here of going, look, we're in a weak position at this moment. And this is a negotiating tactic as we try and reclaim some of my manufacturing. Or am I just justifying?
Maybe you're the pessimist, not me. This is great. We're still the global leader, right? Like, yes, our manufacturing is absolutely, you know, devastated vice where it was in some very, very critical sectors. We've lost, you know, all our capacity, really across the board, we've lost much of our capacity. We've lost, you know, the kind of support, skills, the infrastructure we need for manufacturing. But we are still the dominant global power. And that gives us, I think, more leverage than, you know, saying that we're losing gives us credit for. We do control the global system. China is very dependent on us in key domains. We have strong allies whom we can and should be pushing. We have a strong private sector. China can't function without us right now. The point is, but we're not competing in a way that actually pushes on their weaknesses.
No, and I agree. But my problem is coming out of this pandemic, and the pandemic, I think, has magnified what we've been talking about on this show for years, is that by giving away your manufacturing ability, take chips, for instance. There are so many things we can't make without these magic chips. Why we allowed production to go overseas is beyond me. Why we allowed that vital component, especially on the military front, to be made in China is well beyond my realm of understanding. Other than we had some CEOs who go, hey, this means more money for me, more power for the corporate interest. Screw those workers, screw the consumers, screw the country. We care about profit. I get that, but I don't know as a country why we allowed it.
Because we're short-termist, because we didn't look in the long term, because we love convincing ourselves that, you know, the myth of globalization is right and everyone actually is out there for mutual interest, because we bought China's propaganda.
Did we buy it, or did corporate America sell it to us in prepackaged little Madison Avenue kind of talking points? Because I never bought the whole thing of, hey, let's go get cheap products from somewhere else and bring them back here, and we won't make it here, and it's going to be great. We're all going to have corner offices and wear white shirts and ties and be able to buy all the cheap plastic crap we can get from China, and it's going to be utopia. That never lasts. I don't even know that it ever happened.
I mean, I take it back. Washington bought the Chinese propaganda and the propaganda that was re-disseminated by corporate America. But yeah, I think that's key. And I mean, that's like when you talk about Chinese propaganda in general, it's not just Beijing spouting it. It's Beijing using its mouthpieces across the U.S. to spout it, which is what makes it that much more dangerous.
Now, you guys have a new piece out over at the Force Distance Times. ForceDistanceTimes.com, the website, the story why Dell ditching Chinese chips is great, but not enough. And you, in this pizza, the part that caught my attention is you point out that as of 2021, 85% of Dell's supply chain is in China. And when I told my kids that, they go, well, wait a second. I thought Dell was an American company. I thought, dude, you got a Dell. I thought that was here. And it's not.
I mean, that's great. So in Chinese media, if you look at Chinese media talking about Dell, they describe it as a foreign-owned domestic company, a foreign-owned local company. Like, Dell is so embedded in terms of production, in terms of joint ventures, research and development in China, that it's actually described in Chinese sources as effectively a Chinese company.
Wow. Now, they are bringing some, as I understand from your story, they're bringing some chip production somewhere else, maybe not here, per se, but they're moving a little bit out of China. And you think this is potentially a good thing, or I think, as you put it, or putting a Band-Aid over a bullet hole.
So they announced last week, right, that they're going to try to move away from Chinese-made semiconductors, and that they're also going to encourage their suppliers to decrease dependence on Chinese products, which is, I mean, that's great, right? Like, any announcement like that on the part of a U.S. company, especially a big U.S. company, is a huge step, and it signals a change to this decades-long offshoring dependence to and on China. But it's not like this is just a semiconductors problem. It's not like Dell can just make this announcement and fix its broader exposure problem with China. So if this is like the first in many announcements, that's great. If this is the first in Dell shutting down its research and development centers in China, that's fantastic. If Dell's also moving its Chinese suppliers to non-Chinese suppliers, all of those, that would be the turnaround we need. But the risk is that Dell, the U.S. corporate sector, the U.S. government, what have you, have minimized the China problem to one about semiconductors or about very, very specific nodes that are buzzy and have press attention, and therefore missed the reality that this is a much, much larger industrial problem across every sector, every node in every value chain, across the board.
Now, help me here, because, you know, I've been encouraged by what the administration has been doing on the CHIPS bill and some of this stuff of reclaiming manufacturing and bringing it back. Not thrilled that we have to pay for it, but eventually we have to get it back one way or another, because we do need to have the ability to produce domestically, if not just because it's going to create the jobs and the economy we need. But, you know, from a national security standpoint, if you can't produce anything, you're kind of screwed in a world if you're going to be a military power. I look at the administration as moving us in a direction to get away from the same horrible neoliberalism that caused this kind of situation. The bad trade deals, the bad the corporate pipeline that ships jobs overseas that we have to fund. Do you hold my optimism that maybe this is the beginning of a change globally, or is this just an opportunity for the moment? Because I'm hoping that this is the change I've been screaming about for decades now.
First of all, you need to manufacture not only for national security, but also economic security. Like, how are you supposed to have growth, have opportunity, have a country that builds if we can't make anything? But to the actual question, I'm of two minds. So this has been a watershed past few years, and like, that's undeniable, right? There's new production coming to America. There's a new rhetoric about nearshoring and reshoring, and companies and investors are taking it seriously. That said, and it's really like the Dell story magnified, this is not enough. The CHIPS Act is not enough. That approach to industrial policy or to reinvesting in American production is not enough. Because are we really going to take the CHIPS bill, all tens of billions of dollars of it, and do that across every value chain that matters and every node in every value chain that matters. That's not what the U.S. does. Like, that's not how we operate. And think how much we would have to pay for that. Like, there has to be a broader approach, one that realizes that there are things beyond semiconductors that matter, but also it's not going to be the government directing everything. And part of, I think, what that means is imposing real costs on China for distorting markets. It's not just subsidizing to bring, you know, U.S. subsidies up to match Chinese subsidies. It's also punishing China for their non-free market approach. Because if we just keep building subsidies after subsidies, China's going to win that contest. That's like competing against Beijing's greatest strength, which right. is not going to be good for
no,
us.
No, because our political system doesn't allow for that. I mean, just to get the meager investment that we've gotten in infrastructure and this CHIPS bill, which both historic, but not big, not chunky, not bold, not visionary like I would have liked to have seen. In fact, the infrastructure bill was $1.2 trillion, and you've got the American Society of Civil Engineers saying we need $4.8 trillion. I mean, these half measures only get us so far, as whereas you're pointing out that, you know, China can just do this because they're a communist government.
Exactly. And we're not actually holding them accountable for breaking the rules of the global system.
But here again, you wrote in this piece that I found interesting of how ingrained these American companies are in the Chinese communist government, and how, you know, Dell with the surveillance state and developing software and all kinds of things that have really bore them in, and I would argue harmed not just us but the globe. How do you untie that then? I'm trying to figure out how they're able to back away from that because they are so dependent and ingrained in there.
Yeah, and because of that, like, that's one of the big reasons that the U.S. hasn't imposed the costs on China and on China exposure that we should have, because every time there's really hard-hitting legislation on that front, the U.S. private sector comes in and says, oh, no, we can't do that. It'll destroy our business models. We won't be able to operate. And
yeah, but shouldn't it? This is where
out of it.
This is where I go, shouldn't it? Should this not destroy them? Should this not be the moment where you go, hey, you made your bed, lay in it. You're the one who made these unholy alliances. You're the one for pure greed who sold this country out and ran over there for slave labor and lax environmental regulations and more profit in your pocket while screwing over the workers in this country. You deserve what you get. Should we do that?
And market works. Markets work. So if companies are forced to figure out another way, either they will or a new competitor will come in and do this a way that actually helps America. You know, that's like the U.S. The government needs to step up. American people need to step up and actually hold companies accountable.
And this is where I was going
to
go.
It goes back to the point about like actually punishing China for breaking the rules. That's only one part of it. The other part is punishing U.S. companies for undermining U.S. strength. So there should be much, much stronger costs imposed on American companies for selling us out to China and for continuing to do so.
And this is where consumers have to play into this. This is where, you know, I'm thrilled with the administration's Buy American policies. I'm thrilled with the idea that the EVs and the new technology that they're going has incentives if they're made here. I think we need to do that. I know Europe's losing their mind over the incentives on the EVs and new technology. But you know what? At some point, you got to begin rebuilding your own house.
That Europe thing also. Okay, my whole objective for this was to get the quote Yellen about Yellen in here. So I don't want to be Yellen about Yellen, but I think the Europe thing is also important, vice her meeting, her China meeting. Like, Europe is really mad about the U.S. only focusing on China. And with reason. Like, Europe is our ally. And yes, the U.S. should be pushing Europe, but like now is the chance to do so rather than signaling to them at Davos that all we care about is China and all we care is our kind of like flip-flopping approach to China. And just, you know, following those proceedings from a distance, I have like been frustrated by the U.S. like not actually sitting down with our partners and being like, here's what we're doing. Here's why it matters. Let's try to get on the same page about this. And like, if we're going to prioritize China, which yes, we should in a competitive way, we should be prioritizing China in a way that's aligned with Europe.
No, because I've been watching a lot of the content coming out, out of Davos, and a lot of the commentary is that, basically Europe is the battleground in this war between the U.S. and China, and we do need to bring our allies in. We do need to have a joint strategy. And look, I say this about Trump all the time. I give him credit for the blind squirrel finding the nut. China is a problem, has always been a problem, something I've been screaming about. But, didn't do anything. I mean, the tariffs were, a half measure, but didn't have a strategy, didn't have a plan to pull the rest of the world in. And I'm hoping that the Biden administration does. Let's start here. Are you surprised that the administration didn't undo the tariffs, the Trump tariffs?
No, I'm not surprised. I mean, at this point, this is great, right? Like, this is the most positive I see. The political pressure is such that you cannot do that. Bipartisan issue, an American public issue. The American public is pressuring the U.S. government to be tough on China. And it now comes at a real political cost for either party not to. So I'm not surprised. And I think that that pressure is going to stay, which is great.
No, it's what we need. If we're going to rebuild our manufacturing prowess, if we're going to bring jobs back, if we're going to heal our supply chains and deal with our inflation problems, it starts with being able to produce your own stuff. Because again, this is part of it. The inflation is due to our broken supply chains. Also, good old fashioned American greed. That's a big part of it. But also our broken supply chain. And if nothing we learn coming out of the pandemic, that should be the lesson. Make stuff at home.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was the real danger to my mind with all the talk about pulling back tariffs to respond to inflation would fix the wrong problem, because that would just perpetuate the broken supply chains that are themselves the underlying issue.
So last question I've got for you, because, I'm a little more hopeful now than I've been in a very long time. I see the administration doing some things I'm happy with. Are you hopeful that we're heading in the right direction? I know a lot more needs to be done. I know we need to be much bolder, and we can argue tactics, but do you have hope at least we're moving in the right direction?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's, I have hope in that the political incentive is there. But also, it seems like the market incentive is there. Like, it's very clear that investors are moving toward companies that are operating on an invest in American production logic. It's clear that those companies are doing well, but also that the reverse is true, that investors are worried about China and companies are worried about having major China exposure. And the U.S. is the U.S., right? So recognition and political pressure in Washington is one thing. What we need is the market also to be on board. And it seems like increasingly both those forces are aligned.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at this, and your article on Dell, was... now you could take that about the thousands of companies that have gone over there and how they've integrated their supply chains and become hyper dependent. Because as you pointed out, three quarters of their productive capacities is reliant on China. I don't know how you run a lemonade stand like that, being that dependent on someone who's that, well, at any minute can steal your technology. And if you get ripped off, you deserve it. I've always said that. You went over there, you knew what you were getting into, you got ripped off. Well, that's your problem. There's a place where you could come where your intellectual property is well protected. Right here, you should have stayed.
Precisely. 100%.
I know I rambled a bit, but this is one of those issues that I'm hoping we finally come back to some bit of sanity on. But I hope folks will take a look at the article, Why Dell Ditching Chinese Chips is Great, But Not Enough, written by our good friend here, Emily Delibere, co-founder of Horizon Advisory. We'll get links out over at ForcedDistanceTimes.com, how you can get that. A lot of websites. We'll put it out on social media. Emily, great talking with you. I appreciate you taking time for us.
Absolutely. It was great to see you.
All righty. Going to take a quick break. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back after this. Stick around. Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1920.
3,000 members of the Filipino Labor Union went on strike against the Hawaiian Sugar Planters Association on the island of Oahu. Plantation bosses intentionally recruited Filipino workers in an effort to weaken the Japanese labor force on the island. The bosses pitted one group as strike breakers against the other. The Filipino workers were paid 30 cents less each day than the Japanese workers, in a blatant effort by the plantation owners to sow inter-ethnic disharmony among the employees. The workers also had to purchase goods at extremely high prices from the company stores. Filipino-born Pablo Manalepit, trained as an attorney, became a vocal organizer with the workers. He helped lead the strike, which called for an 8-hour workday and a pay increase. The Japanese Federation of Labor quickly joined the strike, increasing the strikers' numbers to more than 8,000. Portuguese, Chinese, Puerto Rican, Spanish, Mexican, and Korean workers all took part in the fight for better wages, hours, and conditions. The plantation boss's strategy of intentionally creating ethnic tension had failed, and 75% of the sugar workforce on the island of Oahu participated in the strike. The action cost plantation bosses $12 million in lost production. In response, the heavy-handed bosses evicted more than 12,000 workers from their homes. The now homeless strikers stayed with friends, in hotels, or in makeshift accommodations. Some took shelter at Buddhist and Shinto churches. Christian churches on the island opposed the strike, however, and turned away the homeless workers. The strike lasted nearly half a year. And despite the evictions, the overwhelming financial challenges, and a Spanish flu epidemic, the unified workers stood strong and won a 50% increase and better benefits. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So, you know, I'm looking at this story that Emily De La Bruyere and the folks over at Horizon Advisory came out with on Dell. And it can be any company that went over to China. They got lured in. Cheap labor. You can use slave labor. You can abuse your workers. No minimum wage. No maximum hour laws. None of that American stuff. And when the workers, you know, have had enough and they want to commit suicide, you just put nets in the stairwells so nobody can do it, and then put them back to work. So they got really cheap labor. They got no environmental regulation. They got whatever they wanted. Massive subsidies from the Chinese government, and they got sucked in. And as they point out, 85% of Dell's supply chain was in China in 2021. 75% of its productive capacity in China, heavily reliant. So when the communist Chinese government says jump, you better know how high. They put their research and development plants there. They've worked on surveillance. They've worked on all kinds of things that I would argue not great for democracies. And basically stole their technology and are taking over their technology. And you go, well, why would they do that? Well, it's the greed. It comes back to the greed of our CEO class, the folks who sit in those ivory towers and think about how they can maximize their own wealth and that of the shareholders, because the shareholders are sacrosanct. We got to maximize shareholder wealth at all costs, even if it means using slave labor, even if it means screwing over a couple of generations of American workers, stealing their pensions, crushing wages, all that stuff. And I've been screaming about this for years because of all of the negatives that come out of it. But I know, but Rick, we get cheap stuff. No, we don't get cheap stuff. When you look at the total costs, it's not cheap. And from the national security standpoint, and this is what the conversation I had with my kids today, as we were talking about this, we won World War II for two reasons. One, we had an energy supply, and two, we had massive manufacturing capacity that can be moved over to war production. Do we have that capacity currently? We just did a tour back in October and into November, the Working Class Heroes Radio Tour, where we went to a lot of places where we used to make a lot of stuff.
Those buildings are hollowed out. Those buildings are remnants of what they used to be. I know, we're not going to fight wars like we used to. Yeah, we're going to fight them with chips made in China. So the question is, can we move faster? Look, I'm happy with the Biden administration moving us in this direction of undoing some of the negatives of the last 40 years. I just think we need to be moving a lot faster. And we'll see. All right, it's going to come down to you. It's going to come down to me. It's going to come down to us saying enough is enough. And changing our thinking on what we've been sold over the last 40 years. What the economics profession has jammed down our throat as well, absolute. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find yours, you'll find ours. Thanks so much for tuning in.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.